Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. So send us a note if you have an idea or just want to say hi. Our email address is indianaweekend@gmail.com. An interesting piece of economic development news, an update on the Carbon Motors story. That's the company that was going to build a new high-tech police car in Connersville. They promised to bring 1,300 jobs to the city, which badly needs the help, but the company is now in bankruptcy. Backers included the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, supplier of $2 million in grant money, and the city of Connersville, which awarded $5 million. The Indianapolis Star reports that the company is finally selling a car. Actually, it's auctioning off the prototype vehicle, the only one they produced. That's not the way all economic development deals go, but when they do, we notice. A state and community spending millions to compete for badly needed jobs. They win, but still lose. Now there's another approach being talked about for some communities. At a meeting down in Jasper this week, local officials thinking about how to help their community weren't talking about chasing smokestacks, as the saying goes. The conversation with economics professor Tom Lehman of Indiana Wesleyan University in Marion was about the creative class.
We go to a lot of effort to attract businesses. We bid for them. We spend millions and millions of dollars. Does that create wealth in communities?
Well, I'm not sure that that alone is going to do it, because that's a zero-sum game when it comes down to it. Okay, if you've got an existing business and Anderson doesn't get that business and Muncie does, Muncie wins, Anderson loses. That's not going to build wealth in totality over the long run. What you really need is, I think, and this is what Florida also argues, is more of a talented, skilled workforce that is going to develop business to replace old manufacturing that is, when people think of manufacturing, they usually think in terms of, oh, we're going to hire these mid-level, mid-skill type jobs where a high school diploma or some kind of vocational training is all that you need, and that's going to get you enough. Increasingly, manufacturing is even moving away from that, where manufacturing is looking for some mid-skill jobs, but also a lot of high-skilled jobs. And the way in which, based upon the research that I've done, the way in which these communities can generate more wealth and can generate more income is to bring in more educated workers, okay, and to be connected in some way to their urban metropolitan neighbors, in the sense that there are transportation networks, there are job connections, there are social work play networks, where these outlying communities that may be tapering off in terms of their population growth may be flat or declining, if they can connect some way with a more educated, creative class workforce and with their larger metropolitan neighbors, they will tend to do well. If they are in isolation, if they are primarily of lower levels of educational attainment, there is probably not, sadly, hope for them. They are likely to continue to decline. But the ones that can be in close proximity and close network and connection, job and transportation connection to larger metropolitan areas, have a chance of slowly turning around as a result of, in a sense, hitching their wagon, hitching their fortunes, and being open to the possibility of connections with their urban neighbors.
You have an interest in the creative class. What does that mean?
Well, creative class, I didn't define this term at all. Creative class this is largely the work of the urban economist Richard Florida. But we're really talking about workers who have at least a four-year degree. Many of them have professional degrees, and they are working in what we call symbolic analysis or creative type jobs. Their jobs require a lot of analytical ability. They are not routine or mundane. They require creativity and thinking. So for example, an IT analyst, a mathematician, somebody that works with numbers, a data analyst. We talk a lot about big data and processing big data. These are highly creative, class-oriented type workers. We would think of managers who have to make quick decisions and adapt to changing circumstances. Anytime you've got a position where somebody has to change on a routine basis and adapt to change on a routine basis, that's kind of a broad way of describing a creative class worker. And these workers, what they look for, they can go anywhere. They are in high demand, and they can move and locate wherever they like. They, according to Florida and according to some of the research that we have done, they want to be in close proximity to entertainment venues, art venues, performance art, visual art. They want to have a kind of a strong overlap between work and play networks, where they're working around people who they may also associate with in an informal social setting. They want a kind of vibrant nightlife. They want a lot of opportunity for entertainment, but that overlap with their analytical skills and their creativity that they really never, they hone on the job, but those are things that Florida argues they never really shut off. I mean, there's just kind of overlap between work and play that the creative class seeks. And obviously, the best place to find that is in a large, buzzing metropolitan area. The question that we're kind of asking is, how can more rural or micropolitan areas outside of the orbit of a normal metropolitan location, how can they attract some of these creative class workers, and can that work to their advantage?
It might work to their advantage if there were a lot of those folks around, and that enticed companies to locate there because they could find educated people to work in higher tech businesses?
Yeah, that's part of the argument. One of the number one factors that we see site consultants looking at, if you're talking about attracting business, is the level of education of the county labor force or the local labor force. What share percentage of people age 25 and over actually have a four-year degree or more? That's kind of one of the questions that they will ask. And that, of course, the share of the population that has a four-year degree or more often overlaps with that creative class element. Some many of whom have a four-year degree or more, others of whom are artists and creative class workers and thinkers that may not. But often, that educational attainment goes hand in hand with a creative class worker.
Where do places like Muncie, Anderson, Marion, how do they compare in these kinds of metrics?
I know where Grant County compares because Grant County is part of the study that we have done. Unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever the case may be, Muncie and Anderson and Kokomo are actually considered standalone metropolitan areas, and our study purposely dropped the metropolitan areas from.
You're not looking at places like that.
Not looking at places like Kokomo and Anderson and Muncie, more like Grant County, Blackford County, rural and what are called micropolitan areas. I know that Grant County ranks of all 48 non-metropolitan counties in the state of Indiana, Grant County is number one in terms of creative class share. But there are forces that work against that and seem to overcome the benefits that could come from that. Grant County also tends to have a very low labor force participation rate, and that is a big factor in explaining income patterns. And it also tends to have, in spite of some very good universities, also tends to have a relatively low level of educational attainment among the adult population.
Economics professor Tom Lehman of Indiana Wesleyan University in Marion. He was a speaker on Tuesday in Jasper at a conference co-sponsored by the Bowen Center for Public Affairs at Ball State University. So what does Jasper's mayor think about all this? We've got him next.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line to let us know what you think. Email us at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Economic development is a major concern for communities across the state. For many people, it's synonymous with new factories or other big operations with plenty of jobs. But another idea is emerging, that some communities can do better by emphasizing quality of life, becoming places where people want to live, especially those known as the creative class, managers, designers, and other knowledge workers. Jasper was the site this week of a discussion along those lines, a community conversation featuring Professor Tom Lehman, who you met in the previous segment. Eager to hear what he had to say was first-term Jasper Mayor Terry Seitz, a consultant and former broadcaster who is now the town's biggest booster.
DuBois County is undergoing a renaissance of its leaders. We have been led in the private sector by people who have given birth to industries, literally, speaking specifically of office furniture products, of remanufactured engines and transmissions and more. And this area has been so very blessed by local-owned companies developed by local entrepreneurs years ago before we even knew that that was a word in the English language. We have, over the course of the last few years, and much through happenstance and much through foresight of the electorate, have a kind of a different wave of leadership coming in now in the public sector as well. We have new mayors in the city of Huntingburg and Jasper. We have a very active dean at our Vincennes University Jasper campus who is not just a transplant from the home campus at Vincennes with great people, but he's actually a community college person from the northern Midwest. And we have added some new blood literally into some of our county offices as well. The community of Ferdinand, a town, actually, you know, many years ago decided to engage a town manager. And ultimately, we have taken what has generally been German pride and competitiveness, and we've energized that and focused that like a laser beam on taking what our county had and the blessings that we have of being a very strong, vibrant economic center. And now we're kind of parlaying that into doing things from the public sector and looking at things differently. I find that to be extraordinarily healthy, and so do people who engage with me in the community. And ultimately, I think we have a big ship to steer. And really, I can't imagine with what we've done up to this point as a county or as various communities within the county, I can only imagine what can happen in the future. I'm excited.
I think we've traditionally thought of economic development in terms of the factories, the larger companies that we can bring into a community. Fair to say that the conversation is a little broader now?
I believe so, and I can't, as a city, in my opinion, wave that magic wand, as I'm so apt to say, and make things happen. Ultimately, I can be the spirit, I can be the vision, I can say, how can we open our doors as a city? How can we basically make sure that we listen to what our companies may be saying, serve their needs, and ultimately serve our citizens' needs the same way? I recently shared with mayors at a roundtable that we had 170 people at a public event. And the mayors go, oh, my gosh, Mayor, what was wrong? I go, no, it was a planning event for our downtown. We're undergoing a master planning project in our downtown and riverfront, and we had 170 people. This followed a meeting in the spring that had 130 and was followed by another smaller meeting of 60. So we've engaged an average of 120 people at three public meetings in 2013 that had nothing to do with controversy and everything to do with the future. I don't know where I could be a mayor of a better place.
How is that? Because that you're right. Usually people don't come out unless they're angry about something.
I believe the citizens are genuinely engaged, and we're a conundrum. People cannot, from the outside, including Dr. Lehman from Indiana Wesleyan, he really is trying to figure us out. And I kind of smile. That's both good and bad, John.
What was it like? How did it go with Dr. Lehman?
I found Dr. Lehman to be a statistician, of which I'm not. And I found some of that to be like, okay, I don't know what that R squared thing is or whatever else. However, I am thoroughly enthused when we could look at this, and when we look at 2011 non-metropolitan counties in Indiana, DuBois County ranks number one in labor force participation rate, number two in median income, number two in per capita income, number three in education rank, and immigration rank as well, number eight, all while having a population rank of 10. This is because of our strong economic base. I'm talking people with a still lot of manufacturing here that have done so much to become national and global in their economy and bring people in and engage the world. I have a friend of mine who's in Thailand right now. I have another friend who just came back from China, and we're doing this. We have an Indiana city in southern Indiana, not connected by hardly any roads, that has an international marketplace.
I was born in a small town, and I live in a small town.
Jasper Mayor Terry Seitz on the unique qualities of that southern Indiana city. When we come back, beating the brain drain, why young people leave, how to create the kind of places that will draw them back.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.
Professor Tom Lehman of Indiana Wesleyan University is an economist doing research into what creates wealth in smaller rural communities. Grant County, for example, where his school is located. Places like Muncie and Anderson aren't in the study because they're larger. Lehman spoke on Tuesday in Jasper at a conference set up to talk about the economy in DuBois County, about 70 miles south of Bloomington, and how they might benefit from the creative class. The whole discussion brings up the brain drain problem, in which the state's best educated young people take off for jobs, or maybe just a more interesting place to live.
Do we find people leaving for jobs that are equivalent to what could be found in the state, but they want to live in a cooler place?
Yeah, that's very much it. I mean, it's not just jobs. It's the natural recreational amenities that come with those jobs, that are around those jobs. So Denver is, you might have a job in Indianapolis, and somebody might live in Grant County and commute to that job in Indianapolis. But you could take the same job and place it in Denver, or place it in Phoenix, or place it in Austin, Texas, and it might become more attractive just because of that location and just because of the unique milieu in that area and the environmental amenities, the average climate, the temperature is more amenable or more appealing. And so you end up losing that worker, or you end up losing that class of workers, because in the Midwest, you can't control climate. You can't control those kinds of natural amenities.
Is this part of a general trend that communities, instead of just continually offering tax abatements or other financial incentives, are trying to improve the overall social infrastructure or something?
Well, we are very much in the phase, as you alluded to earlier, of kind of a structural shift in the type of jobs that people do. And whether we stick with manufacturing as our primary economic base or we move into information technology, the types of jobs that people do are becoming increasingly more symbolic analysis, where they're requiring education, they're requiring analytical skills, they're requiring what Florida identifies as this broader kind of creative class. And those workers can work wherever they want. And so if you don't have the other social entertainment infrastructure, as you call it, then you risk losing them. However good the job might be, they might go somewhere else. And increasingly what we're finding, and urban economists like Ed Glazier and Richard Florida are saying, it's not about attracting the business firm as much anymore. It's not about what we used to call, or still sometimes refer to, as smokestack chasing. It's about getting rooftops. And those rooftops have to denote a particular skill of labor, a particular kind of labor. And then you will attract the businesses. So where 40 years ago it might have been attract the business and then the laborers will come and they will form your tax base, now it's attract the workers and the businesses will come. That's kind of the the general shift that we are undergoing and that we are seeing is that transportation costs, communication costs, those are low enough that a business firm that can be flexible, it can move where its workers are, where it identifies what kind of worker it wants and moves there. The worker identifies what kind of social and cultural context they want to work in and live in, and that's what they choose. They may, I mean, Florida identifies people may move to the city that they want to live in as a consumer of that city and then decide where they're going to work and what kind of a job they're going to take. Where it used to be, I better find a job and then that will dictate where I move. People now make the decision about where to move quite independently of whether they have a job or not, and then take the job after. And business firms are very similar. They'll move to the area where the labor force is, rather than saying, we're going to build here because we have a special tax abatement, and then the workers will just come to us. So it's a very different world, and it's a tough challenge for the Midwest generally. It's tough. And then you look at the Midwest, and you look at the outlying communities in the Midwest, and it's even tougher for them. That's why I said, I think the best chance of these kind of outlier rural micropolitan communities in the Midwest is to develop as many connections as possible with their urban counterparts, create an environment where educated workers and immigrants and a diverse workforce are welcome, and then kind of promote these creative class enclaves as much as possible, just outside the perimeters of urban areas that might actually have more opportunity in some senses for natural and recreational amenities, and those natural and recreational amenities may be an attractive option for creative class workers.
Tom Lehman, an economics professor at Indiana Wesleyan University. By the way, someone teaching college students is reminded every year about the strong, almost gravitational pull that places outside Indiana can have on our students. Some of us have waved goodbye to kids headed to Austin, Denver, Chicago, New York. In some cases, the attraction is so strong they move without a job at the other end. You might conclude that besides building the creative class amenities that Professor Lehman talks about, there's not much we can do. Exploration, after all, is a primal drive. Maybe our best hope is to build communities nice enough so that when they come home for, say, Thanksgiving, they take a look around and figure out, well, the old place isn't so bad after all. And that, friends, is another Indiana Weekend. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman, and to those about to wander on journeys of their own. There is more to home than you know, but that, of course, you can't know until you leave. Glad you could join us this time. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with plans for your own journey. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.